Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day. We want you, yes, you, to join the Behind the Knife team as a surgical education fellow. We're looking for enterprising surgical residents to take the bull by the horns and build something new and exciting. Fellows will benefit from ample support from the Behind the Knife team, including the use of our digital education platform and access to all of our resources like illustrators, video editing, AI tools, social media, and more. Get your name out there and build your CV by being part of the number one surgery education platform in the world. We're offering a two-year fellowship starting in July 2026 and ending in June 2028. Only residents beginning their two-year academic development time will be considered. Check out the show notes for more information, including the application link. All applications are due on April 20th. Again, all applications are due by April 20th.
Welcome back to Behind the Knife. I'm Iman Oli, a general surgery resident at Duke Hospital and a Behind the Knife fellow. Today, we're going to talk about a unique, grueling, and often misunderstood pathway in surgical training, the preliminary year. Before we start, I want to acknowledge that there are many perspectives we won't cover today, and some that we plan to cover in the future, so please let us know any feedback or requests. Also, for international medical graduates looking to apply into a residency, I encourage you to listen to our prior podcasts, Dominate the Match, episodes 6 and 7, where we go through that in detail. Now, back to the discussion for today. The preliminary year is complicated. For some, it's a necessary step on the way to another specialty, like interventional radiology or anesthesia. But for others, the non-designated prelims, it's a one-year audition with no safety net. It's a year of working the same brutal hours, taking the same calls, and rotating on the same services as categorical residents, all while simultaneously trying to build a CV, reapply for residency, and secure a future position. I talked about the experience of this year with three guests, a program director, a now attending and former preliminary resident, and a current preliminary resident. But before we go into that, I think it's helpful to briefly talk about how we got here. In the early 20th century, William Halstead established the first formal surgical training program at Johns Hopkins, heavily inspired by the German system. It was a pyramidal structure, Machiavellian by design. Programs would bring in a massive class of interns, but there were only a few spots at the top. Promotion was never guaranteed. There was little to no room for remediation. So you either outworked the surgeon next to you, or you were out. This ruthless framework persisted for decades, and it wasn't until 1996 that the Residency Review Committee for Surgery finally prohibited pyramidal programs. Instead, programs were only permitted to offer as many categorical internship positions as they had chief spots to finish. But there was a catch. Surgery programs still needed hands to cover the floor and fill vacancies left by attrition or residents stepping away for research. And there entered the modern, non-designated preliminary position. Originally, these spots were marketed as a mutually beneficial relationship. Programs got the workforce they desperately needed, and unmatched applicants got a foot in the door. But as a former prelim, Justine Broker pointed out in her 2023 AWS blog, which I highly recommend reading for current prelims, there is an undeniable power imbalance. Prelims depend on program support to advance. They have to prove themselves daily within a surgical culture, which is no small task. Furthermore, these residents reported lower program satisfaction and felt less collegiality than their categorical peers. Nonetheless, the preliminary system remains a vital entry point. It's a system built on necessity, steeped in history, and incredibly challenging to navigate. So, back to the interviews. We'll start with an interview with Dr. Louise Jackson, an assistant professor of surgery, a colorectal surgeon, and one of the most important educators we have here at Duke. So first, Dr. Jackson, thank you so much for doing this. Do you mind just telling everybody a little bit about how you had a prelim position to begin with and what that experience was like?
Yes, of course. So I'm from the United Kingdom originally, and I trained there for medical school and worked there for about 3.5 years, and then decided I wanted to come to the US to train. and I had no experience in the United States. And so when I applied to multiple programs, I think it was over 55 programs, I did not match the categorical spot and I ended up scrambling.
Do you remember what that felt like? And especially the scramble, and you know, the scramble occurs over such a small period of time. And I imagine that that's a lot of emotions to manage and a lot of things to do in a very short window.
Yes. So I think, to be honest, not getting the categorical position was not wholly unexpected. I was pretty far out of medical school, which is generally viewed as a negative, and I had no observership or US experience. And so that wasn't wholly unexpected, but scramble day was still when fax was a really big thing. And so I got the second fax machine, and then I had all my emails lined up and my phone ready to do all the international calls. And then the day before, I realized the clocks changed a different week in America than in the UK. And so the actual timing was a whole hour different. And I just realized that like the day before scramble day. But essentially how I got my position was the program director at the program I ultimately matched into walked into his office and my fax was on the floor in his office. And the first call I got was from a program in Texas. They were incredibly kind and we talked for a little bit. And they basically said, you have a prelim spot here. Just let us know by the end of the day. And then I got a second call from the program that I ultimately went to and they offered me a prelim spot.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we had more time to just talk about that whole story because it sounds quite different from what we experience now. I want to ask, when you decided to accept the position, what was going on in your mind before you actually started? And what did you do to prepare yourself for success? Now, of course, you had in some sense, an advantage of having already done a surgical residency in the UK, but I assume that there's still a lot that you did to prepare.
Yes, yeah, so first thing was really understanding. So in the UK, by that point in time, we were working about 56 hours a week. And so I was really thinking about what it would be like to work an 80-hour work week or more. And then I needed to find somewhere to live. And I found that on Craigslist and booked my apartment for 6 months without ever seeing it. And then I had to figure out how I was going to get a car and a social security number and all of the logistics of how to do that. And then at that point, we didn't have electronic medical records in the UK. So really thinking about like how I was going to manage all of that. And then I have the worst sense of direction. So being in a new large medical facility, I'm just used to getting lost for at least the first week. So trying to navigate all of those things.
And did you reach out to anybody before you started or speak to anybody specifically?
I did. I had a contact who was a faculty surgeon in Wisconsin from one of the surgeons I knew in the UK. And I talked with him a couple of times on the phone and it was moderately helpful. I mean, he gave me the faculty perspective, but not really the resident perspective. That was just when I got here, just trial by fire, I think.
And I would love to hear about your resident experience because when you started, I imagine, I mean, it's a new system, new way of doing things. At the same time, there was probably a lot of pressure about what would happen next year. And can you talk a little bit about how you navigated at least the start? What were the biggest challenges? And then we can from there.
Yes. So they did an intern boot camp, which was incredibly helpful for things like the EMR, navigating the hospital. And I'd worked for about 3.5 years in the UK, so I had pretty broad general surgery and vascular experience. And the only rotation I didn't want to start on was ped surg. And of course, that's the first rotation I had. And so I did a lot of reading. I relied heavily on my senior resident, who was very thoughtful about how he taught the juniors and protected them and integrated us into the system. And he'd been a prelim too, so I think that was helpful being with him for the first month to really get some mentorship about how to succeed as a prelim and IMG and how to set myself up for the rest of the year. I will say during that first month, I gave out the home phone number of the chief of pediatric surgery to all the patients to make their follow-up appointments. And his wife was the sweetest lady and just made the appointments for the children. for the first week before he gave me the correct number. And I still managed to stay on for a second year.
Oh my God. And feel that. So it sounds like the mentorship was very helpful. Did you seek out any other formal types of support, particularly for your position, to try and secure that next year?
Yes, I think I had a couple of faculty who were really good advocates for prelim residents that had been prelims themselves, and they gave me very helpful advice. And within that residency program, they had a lot of prelims. They had at least one prelim a year. And those residents really provided excellent mentorship in how to navigate the year successfully, what the goals were, the timeline of how to get things done, and provided really excellent support.
And how would you advise, let's say, somebody who finds himself in a preliminary position next year that didn't quite expect one, how would you advise them to get that same level of mentorship and help to navigate their year?
Yeah, I think seeking out people who have been prelims and been successful is extremely helpful to give both perspective and advice. And it's just, it's helpful to see someone who's done it and succeeded to know that that is possible. And then I think it's so hard because that whole year is essentially an interview. And so you have to work hard, do the right thing, be successful, meet the right people, and do all of that with good grace and a smile whilst applying for more jobs and having the uncertainty of not knowing if you're going to be successful and even finish surgery residency. And also dealing with the feeling of not quite being fully included in everything, which is a matter of perspective because it's not always the case, but you can definitely feel like that as you're going through the year.
Yeah. Before we talk about what you've done here at Duke, especially to make that a more comfortable process, just when you were going through, at what times did you feel that the struggle was the hardest, and what did you do to really get yourself back?
Yeah, I think the biggest parts were towards the end of the year, both the first year and the second year, because I was a second year prelim too. Just that uncertainty of not knowing where you're going to be next year was the hardest, and going places to interview and coming back to my home program and saying, you know, this place has offered me a job, are you going to offer me a job? And trying to navigate all of that from a position of being an intern. You know, you're not in a strong negotiating position. And then ultimately, the feeling of overwhelming relief when I finally matched into a categorical position.
I can't imagine having to deal with the politics and everything else and just the stress in addition to being an intern. Now, when you advise resident here, and for our listeners, you know, you're very involved with the residents here from at all levels, prelims or non-prelims, and we all very much appreciate you more than you realize. When you do have somebody come up to you in that position, what advice do you give them? How do you support them?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is having the strongest plan A possible. So preparing for each rotation, preparing for each case, preparing for each faculty interaction, and working really hard and relying on the support networks around you, your other residents, your other prelims, faculty, including myself, to just really do the very best job day to day that you possibly can do, and finding ways to show that you excel, whether that's getting involved in a small research project, even presenting at M&M that can become a positive thing in that situation, and just really being prepared for everything. And then putting yourself out there, making those meetings with the program directors, associate program directors, chair of surgery, to make sure they know how serious you are about becoming a surgeon and staying in that program. The other thing is not feeling that you're putting the program out when it's interview time. Your program, especially your program director, fully understands your need to find a job for the year after. And when you're going through that interview cycle as a prelim, it can feel like you're a burden to everybody else and that you're putting people out by taking time away. You are not, and you shouldn't feel like that. That is so important for your career and all of the hard work you've put into being an intern at that program. That's their payback for you supporting you through that.
agree completely. I think that it is our responsibility, if you take on a prelim resident, that you need to support them to not be a prelim resident next year.
Yeah.
And
as I hinted towards having a really strong plan A, it's also really, really important to have a strong plan B so that you have an idea and a thought of what you will do if you don't match and if you're not successful. And I encourage all of our prelims to really think about that in a thoughtful way and make sure that they do have a plan B, even if it's uncomfortable to think about it and talk about it.
And how do you navigate scenarios where people had attempted to match into a different subspecialty of surgery and now maybe are seriously considering a general surgery residency? I feel like that is a specific cohort of residents where it's very challenging to apply, reapply in that same fellowship while also trying to think about a future in general surgery. So what advice do you give to those students in particular?
Yeah, I think general surgery is a really hard backup option. I don't think it's a great plan B because you have to show commitment. And when I'm reading through applications for residency, that's one of the things I'm really looking for is what are the motivations to go into it and what's their level of commitment. And I think when you're using general surgery as a plan B, I think it's really hard to convey that in an application. It's not impossible. We've certainly had people do it here and do it successfully, but you also have to make sure from your personal point of view that it's a good plan B for you. I think if you really want to do orthopedics or plastics or dermatology, are you truly going to be happy being a general surgeon? And so I'm not sure that general surgery is a great plan B in the vast majority of circumstances.
Yeah, and I think especially now things are even more competitive. And I imagine that nowadays as a program director, it's probably even more unappealing to look at an application where you can tell that they're not quite as invested in their specialty. The general surgery truly is its own specialty.
Yeah. And I think if you come in as an unmatched orthopedic resident for general surgery program, I think you've got to make the decision early on. Are you going to reapply to orthopedics and make that your number one focus? Or are you going to say, okay, I'm going to do general surgery and then really spend that year building that CV and that support to write strong letters and show that your commitment is fully there one way or the other?
Yeah, and that comes back to your plan A, plan B type of, you really need to have a strong thing. And it sounds like general surgery just can't be your plan B.
I would say in the personal statement and in your reapplication, when you're applying as a prelim to either categorical spots or to other prelim spots, it's okay to talk about your original plan. It doesn't have to all be completely centered around your time as a prelim. I see a lot of applications that basically just talk about that prelim year. But I want to know about all the amazing things that you've done before the prelim year that when you applied that first time round. Don't leave those things out because those are so amazing and lovely to read about.
And I really want to get your perspective on navigating a mistake as a preliminary resident. And you kind of hinted on it when you accidentally gave that phone number. But, you know, I remember my first week of the residency very well because, you make mistakes. And you make a lot of mistakes. And especially as an intern, I think it's very hard to realize that everyone else has done that as well. And I imagine that as a prelim, that feeling is even worse. I guess I'd love to hear your thoughts on what really is a mistake that you can make as a preliminary resident, what feels like a mistake and isn't a mistake, and how can you really recover?
Yeah, I think I got yelled at a lot as a resident. I think the only time I really got yelled at where I really felt it was when I hadn't called somebody in the middle of the night when I should have. I would say just do all the things that you're meant to do. And what people are watching and looking for is not how many mistakes you make or what mistakes you make. It's how you react to it and respond to it. As you said, everybody makes mistakes and does things that they wish they could change. But what people want to see is that growth mindset and that when you've made a mistake once, you learn from it and it doesn't happen again. And there's not a pattern there. I do think coming in with 3 years of experience helped. It certainly makes that clinical side of things a lot easier. But like I said, it's not whether you make mistakes or not. All interns make mistakes. It's how you respond to it and grow from them.
Yeah, no, thank you. And if there was one thing you wish you had as advice before you started your year, and if there's just one key thing that you would tell everybody, what would that be? Especially in that time coming up between match and your start date? Because I imagine a lot of people listening to this may be in that position where they're not sure what to do. Is there anything specific you would advise people to?
Yeah, I think if there's any way that you can go to the program early and spend time there ahead of the start date, whether that's paid or unpaid, that time will be well invested so that you hit the ground running from day one. And then I think the biggest piece of advice I can give you about getting through that prelim year is try and keep the most positive, sunny attitude you can. I'm not sure whether this is why I got my categorical spot, but the last question I got asked in that interview was, how would your program director describe you? And I said, you know, hardworking and meticulous. And then I finished with the word happy. And I've never seen this, anyone's eyebrows shoot off their head, but he was like, happy as a prelim resident. And I was like, yeah, I love surgery and I love doing this job. And I don't know whether that's what got me the job, but I'm pretty sure it was a large factor in it.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jackson. That's all. And again, thank you so much for taking the time.
You're welcome.
I'm now joined by Dr. Kevin Shah, who's a surgical oncologist specializing in HPV and assistant professor of surgery here at Duke. He's also the general surgery program director. So thank you, Dr. Shah, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
I think it's very valuable to have your perspective as a program director. And the first question that I have for you is, when people are applying as medical students or otherwise, and they find out that they didn't match, during that scramble, how do you advise people about choosing between a preliminary position versus maybe taking a year off to do research or taking a different type of route?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, one of the most difficult situations that, you know, medical students or anyone going into a residency can find themselves in. You know, the first thing is everyone who's been through medical school, most of the time they've only known success, right? And they've achieved things at a really high level, you know, at each successive point in their academic career. And so this is probably the first point where they're met with real significant professional challenges. And so it's very common in the situation for people to just kind of get turned around and unable to figure out what the next step should be. What you have to do is take a step back and think about why you didn't match. And so, you know, there are a few different scenarios that can happen. Sometimes people are applying into a non-general surgery position. And so, you know, they've applied into plastics or ortho or something else, and they haven't matched into that specialty. And so they're trying to figure out the path forward. The other scenario is people are trying to get a categorical general surgery position and were unable to get a categorical position through the match. I think those two situations are a little bit different. And then there's also the individual factors, right? So why you didn't match as an individual person. So for some people, they might have, you know, strong board scores and strong grades, but very limited research. In that situation, you know, taking a year off and doing research and reapplying might be the best strategy. For other people, they've got, you know, a whole pile of publications, but they still didn't match. In that case, doing more research is not the problem. What you have to figure out is where the weakest point of your application was. Sometimes it's just random. Sometimes there's actually something that you can pinpoint. And so in that situation, doing the prelim year is probably the best bet. Because most of the time, if you have, you know, a strong research background or at least a history of publications, the issue isn't that. The issue is there's some question about your clinical ability or the strategy that you employed in applying.
Today's episode of the Behind the Knife podcast is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Gore Medical Products Division. When it comes to ventral hernia repair in high BMI and comorbid patients, strength matters. Gore Synacor Biomaterial is a permanent mesh that is built like a lightweight, with the strength of a heavyweight, and has zero reported mesh fractures. With a less than 1% recurrence rate in ventral hernia working group grade 1 and 2 patients and a low rate of infection, Synacor is designed to support your complex ventral hernia repairs. Visit goremedical.com/btkpod to learn more and ask your Gore representative about sizing and availability.
Gore is Synacor biomaterial, no compromise for your high BMI and comorbid patients. Intended for U.S. audiences only, Gore is a financial sponsor of this podcast, which has been independently developed by the presenters and does not constitute medical advice from Gore. Always consult the instructions for use prior to using any medical device.
In your experience, who do you think most commonly finds themselves to benefit the most from a prelim year? Is it somebody that may be trained overseas and has to show a clinical ability in the United States in the system? Who is that person that benefits the most?
Yeah, you know, probably the most common situation is someone who has done their medical education outside the U.S. and they're trying to get into a U.S. residency position. That is probably the most, you know, that's probably the classic situation, because the main concern that people often have when trying, you know, thinking about recruiting international medical graduates is what their ability to navigate the U.S. healthcare system is going to be. And, you know, there's a dual challenge. One is that when you're an international medical grad, getting clinical experience is really difficult, right? Sometimes you're limited to observerships. It's hard to get an actual sub-internship. And so that leads to the next issue, which is how can you actually prove that you can function well in the U.S. healthcare system? And so in that situation, doing a prelim year can really be something that boosts your application significantly for the next application cycle. For those that have graduated from a U.S. program, there still is value in doing a prelim year in many circumstances. And you just have to sort of think about what your individual, you know, situation is. If your goal is to be a general surgeon that, you know, practices in the rural U.S., right, doing research may not be something that you're really interested in. And, you know, doing a prelim year and working hard and getting another set of recommendation letters might be the thing that helps you secure a position rather than doing research, which is something that you're really not passionate about. Because when you apply for programs, you're likely not going to be applying to programs that prioritize research. And so how important that research experience is going to be is really, I think, dubious.
And as a program director, I'm sure you play a very important role in especially the prelims that come to Duke. And so when they start their program, what does the conversation look like when you sit down with them? And how do you guide them towards a successful year?
Yeah, I think this is a really important question, and one that is actually, the answer is a lot simpler than people probably make it out to be. The things that make a good categorical intern are the same things that make a good preliminary intern. All the same things that you want any intern to do, working hard, being a good part of the team, being prepared, working efficiently, those are all the same things that we look for out of any intern. When people approach a preliminary year, they often approach it as like a year-long audition rotation. And there is some value in that, right? You obviously want to put your best foot forward. You want to show people what you are capable of. But I also think there is a little bit of danger in that, because sometimes it takes you a little bit outside of yourself and you're constantly trying to prove yourself instead of just doing a good job and showing what you can do through your actual actions. Instead, you're focused more on how can I demonstrate to somebody that I'm actually doing it. Having said that, there are important differences that you have to keep in mind. So what we try and do here is consciously give prelims face time with people who might be able to give them letters of recommendation early in the year. We also give them try and give them more face time with attendings so that people actually know who they are and have a better sense as to how they're performing. In general, no matter if you have FaceTime with an attending or not, they're going to hear from the residents about how the interns are doing, right? And so even if you don't have a ton of FaceTime with an attending or with the chair or program director, whoever it may be, there's still are ways in which your performance is going to be communicated back to them to sort of inform what your level of performance is. So, you know, I think people sometimes get carried away trying to prove what they can do. And the problem is the beginning of intern year overlaps with sub-I season, right? And so if you're at a place with a lot of medical students and sub-interns, there's this like tension between the prelims getting FaceTime and the sub-I's getting FaceTime. And so what I would say is don't make it a competition and just do your job and work hard, and honestly, the rest will kind of take care of itself. You have to be strategic, obviously, but that's from a clinical performance standpoint. In terms of preparing your application, there are things that you have to do specifically. If this is your second time around applying for categorical positions in another field, you have to try and arrange a rotation in that specialty early on in the year so you can get another letter of recommendation. And if you're applying it to general surgery, similarly, you want to get rotations where you'll be able to get letters of recommendation, but you have to start preparing your personal statement, your CV, all those things very well in advance, and then workshop it with either the program director or other faculty mentors that you have in the department so that you have the most polished application you possibly can. And then finally, being strategic about signals and looking for PGY2 positions. That's sort of the general approach that I take to prelim interns.
Yeah, I think the audition point was very well made, because I think one of the hard things for me as a medical student was that feeling of constantly auditioning. And it's definitely good to know that you don't really need to do that. You just have to work very hard, the same as anyone else. And so let's say that somebody really wants to stay at your institution. Is there anything specific that you're looking for in them that maybe can really help somebody stay where they're doing that audition year, that prelim year?
Yeah, the first thing that I would say is, obviously, we've taken our own prelims as categoricals, both as, you know, promoted to PGY2 status and through the match. But the one thing that I would advise anyone who's going to be doing a preliminary year is not to put all your eggs in one basket, meaning you go somewhere to do a prelim year, you shouldn't feel like this is my one and only choice to get a categorical position. I've seen that happen before where people feel like this is the only place that I can or will train, and it becomes really limiting. You have to take a really broad, you know, a really broad approach to the reapplication process. And truthfully, any categorical position is better than a prelim position. I mean, that I think that's one very important point, because I've seen people take prelim positions over categorical positions because it's at a preferred institution. And that generally is not sound advice, because the number one goal is to become a surgeon, right? In order to become a surgeon, you have to get a categorical residency position. And once you get that categorical position, you can do what you want after that, but you got to take step one first. If someone wants to stay at the institution where they're at, you know, it's all the same things that I said before. People are looking for the same things that they would normally look for in a categorical resident or a categorical recruit. But the main difference is they actually have a record of performance when they're looking at a prelim, right? And so in a lot of ways, that's a big advantage that a prelim intern has over a medical student who's applying for the first time, likely hasn't done a rotation at the institution. And, you know, you get a sense from letters of recommendation, but, you know, those are not, you know, sort of all encompassing. So, you know, working hard, doing a good job, and then having... if your career goals are aligned with the institution and, you know, what you want to do is aligned with what the institution values, that's also an important thing, right? So for us, you know, we're looking for people who are going to be exceptional technical surgeons and great clinical surgeons, people who are interested in making an impact on the field, and those that are going to work well as part of a team, right? So those are like broadly the things that we're looking for. And so just as we would look for that in an MS4, we would look for the same things in a prelim intern. Again, there's nothing special you have to do other than work hard and do a good job. You should indicate interest in staying, but like trying to sort of convince someone that you should stay there is generally not going to be effective. What's going to be effective is showing what your performance is.
Thank you. And I would like to ask you briefly about conflict. I think that occasionally, especially in the start of the year, people are still trying to figure out what's going on and conflict arises, whether that's between residents at the institution and the prelim resident, or just conflict within themselves and struggling to perform the way that they would like to perform. How do you approach those situations, and what advice would you give to someone? Because I think, if I remember my intern year well, that first few months, you felt like you were underperforming every single day. So,
I think globally, I would just tell people to cut themselves a little bit of slack. When you're a day one intern, you've got no clue about what's going on. Like, I still remember, like, just looking around, like, what is happening? Half the things people told me, the abbreviations, I was like, what is this? I have no idea. So, you know, everyone is in that position. And that's the point where the audition mentality can be really damaging, right? Because you feel like every interaction, your future hinges on it, right? This is the same problem that sub-I's often have. They get one question wrong and they think, oh my God, I'm going to have to like do internal medicine now, right? Like you have to take a deep breath and understand that the whole point of residency is you don't know everything. In fact, very little. And it takes a long time to acquire that knowledge. So that's the first thing. Don't beat yourself up about everything that you do wrong, because everyone does things wrong in the beginning. Literally every single person. You can think about the most famous chair of surgery anywhere. They made a ton of mistakes as an intern, right? So everyone's starting from the same place. Now, interpersonal conflict, that's a bigger issue. And if you're getting into arguments with people all the time, to me, that's not an encouraging sign about your ability to work with others. Even if you're put in a position where you are right and the other person is wrong, or you think you're doing the right thing and you're trying to advocate for the patient, there's a way to do it that is professional and courteous and in the spirit of teamwork and collegiality. And then there's a way to do it that is abrasive and confrontational. And no matter what the situation, you always have a choice, and you can make the choice to be professional and calm. It's hard to do sometimes. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I'm a saint, right? Like I've lost my cool on occasion, but you always have that choice. And the best thing to do is just take a step back, take a deep breath. Because if you get in arguments with people, your chances of one, staying at that institution go down significantly. And two, the quality of your letters may reflect that you had a difficult time getting along with people. I think that's what your question was about.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I feel that other residents can be aggressive, or other residents can kind of have that mentality of there is a difference and how do people best advise it? And I think that your advice of be calm, be collected, go do it the most professional way possible is important advice.
Yeah, it's hard when you feel like you're being scapegoated, because interns are the easiest scapegoats, right? Like, right. You know, the senior resident pins something on you, like, this should have been followed up on. There's not really a situation in which you're going to be able to, like, argue your way out of that. The other thing that I would advise when people are looking for prelim positions, to try and get a feel, and this is a very hard thing to do, and oftentimes if it's during the scramble, it's even harder to do. But get a sense as to like what the level of support is, right, for the prelims. You may feel like I just got to get a position. And to some extent, there's some truth to that, right? Like you don't want to be too precious about your choices, right? You want to give yourself an opportunity and then capitalize on that opportunity. But, you know, you can get a sense as to whether or not this is going to be a place that's supportive of you or not. You can ask about the track record of previous prelim interns, what they went on to do. You can look at the website even and see where people came from. And then if you feel like this is a place where they don't really care, then you may think about whether there are other prelim opportunities at another institution. The other thing is, you know, to go back to a previous question about what if you want to stay, just because you aren't offered a position to stay at the institution doesn't mean that they don't care about you and that they don't want you to succeed. There are two things. One, there has to be an open spot to give you a spot, right? If there's not an open spot, unfortunately, the reality is it's unlikely that a spot can be made. The second thing is general surgery is super competitive, right? And even if someone really likes you and thinks that you're doing a great job, you're still competing against a lot of really phenomenal applicants. And just because you don't get a spot at the same place where you are doing your prelim year doesn't mean that they're not working really hard to get you a spot somewhere else. And it can feel like a little bit of rejection, and it's hard for it not to feel that way. But I would take a different lens in the way that you view that, because people generally really want the prelim interns to succeed, and places that have a good supportive environment for the entire residency don't really treat the prelim interns too differently than the categorical ones, other than making sure that they're in a position to succeed in the next match cycle.
Those are my questions, and thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
So now I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Rafael Tianco, who was a good friend of mine at Tulane University. He went to medical school there and in between took a two-year research fellowship at Johns Hopkins prior to applying to residency. At the time, he applied into plastic surgery, ended up soaping into a preliminary position, but is now a general surgery PGY1 categorical at Penn State. Rafi, thanks for joining.
Hey, good to see you again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, do you want to maybe give a little bit about how you ended up in a preliminary position? What was your pathway to get there? And what did it feel like when you found yourself in that scenario?
Sure, yeah. It was quite unfortunate. So I applied, it was the 2024 match. I applied plastic surgery and general surgery with a research-heavy application. I think what happened was I just came off research and I just wasn't the strongest student. And clinical performance was just weighed very heavily in choosing applicants. So that's where I came short. What happened was on March, I got the email. I figured I didn't match, met with my advisor, and fortunately during the third round of SOAP, accepted a prelim position at LSU. I'm so grateful for that. They literally saved my career. That's pretty much how I ended up there. I ended up doing well, found new mentors, and fortunately I matched here at Penn State. I'm really happy things worked out.
Yeah, so am I. And thanks for sharing it. I bet it was very difficult. And when you first matched at LSU, you found out now you're swapping paths a little bit. This is unexpected. You're going to be taking a preliminary role in general surgery. What immediate actions did you take? And did you get any guidance and preparation before you started?
Absolutely. So the first thing I did was reach out to my mentors, and actually I cold emailed previous PDs who I interviewed with to see if I can get some feedback. So the purpose of that was to determine what my weaknesses are and where I can improve. What did I do well? What did I do poorly? And sometimes these conversations can be difficult. Sometimes you'll figure out, okay, is this somebody who will support me the next time around? Or is this somebody who will just say, thanks for working with me, you know, good luck in your next steps? That's a very important thing to figure out. Who will be your supporters next year? Because if you don't have somebody who will go up to bat for you, then it'll be extremely hard for you to match the next year. Next thing I did was, you know, I had a research project that I was cooking up. And during the 3 months, you know, was finishing up my fourth year, I just pretty much just knocked it out, just wrote it, and found a new mentor at LSU because of that. So that's the second thing I did. And pretty much the third and fourth kind of the little things I did afterwards was just redo my personal statement. And I did another rotation in general surgery, I believe. And then I started studying for AbSight.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And I think something that we hear about a lot is mentorship. And I think that it comes up frequently, but especially in this scenario, it sounds like mentorship really was critical, absolutely crucial. So we have people that listen to this at all stages. And I guess it's good to hear just how important it is, especially to from the attending side, that they support people like you. So I think that that definitely means a lot. Now, how did you go about finding those mentors at LSU?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. So it was a little serendipitous. A lot of my research over Baltimore was in Bern. And coincidentally, my first rotation at LSU was with the Bern department. So they already knew, they're just like, oh, that's guy, that's that guy who was at ABA. And so I think I was able to show off my knowledge, work hard. There were many nights where I would stay overnight in the Bern call room, sleep on the bench, and work patients up and admit them in the middle of the night. And I was just honestly happy to be there, made lots of good friends with the nurses. Shout out to the New Orleans Bern unit. And that went a long way into getting a good letter from a very well-known Bern surgeon. And that guy went up to bat for me, especially being another surgical subspecialty that, you know, is starting to stray away from general surgery. So without his support, I don't think that people would have believed me when I said, I really do enjoy general surgery and this is something I want to pursue. So yeah, it was pretty much that. Having a good relationship with the PD for there, because he really went up to bat for me, and pretty much just having my mentors over at Hopkins to support me as well.
Yeah, and how did you go about having a good relationship with the PD and the other mentors? I mean, what advice would you give to somebody who maybe is starting their prelim year or is in the middle of one or is thinking they might have to take one? What advice would you give to them?
Absolutely. I think it should go without being said that you should be the hardest working person there, have a good attitude, et cetera, et cetera. But pretty much, it's just how you present yourself in front of folks. I was honestly just happy to jump back into clinical work after 2 years of research. I might as well call my fourth year of medical school my third year of research, because that's pretty much all I was doing. And I think it went a long way. When you show a good attitude, you might not know everything. You might mess things up. But if you want their good side, they might forgive a couple things and end up being your biggest supporter. As long as you have a good attitude and are willing to learn and just pretty much be a good intern, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think the attitude goes a long way. Nobody expects you to know everything. I think it would be crazy if you did. But everybody wants someone that they're happy to go to work with every day. So that's definitely important. Now, when you first started, how did you think about your career and your next step? How did you kind of decide whether or not you were going to go again for your subspecialty or go into general surgery or a different field? And I think that question is important because a lot of people that apply subspecialty find themselves in a prelim position, whether that's surgery or medicine. And then comes a big question of how do you redirect yourself in your career if need be?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So I always knew that I would be happy being a general surgeon. So that is why I felt comfortable going the general surgery route, because at the end of the day, I'd want to be a board certified general surgeon with additional subspecialty training. So number one, figure out if that is your personal goal. Number two, I would try to figure out how bad do you want it and if there's a path forward. Because if you dual apply, it sort of weakens your application because it spreads you out too thin. And there are some programs that talk to each other. And so what I decided is that, look, I'm applying for a second time, and the second time I want a categorical position. So that is why I only applied categorical general surgery. And that is how I ended up gaining support from the department, because they knew I was switching over.
Now, other questions for you is, when you found yourself now at LSU, did you find that there were differences in how people treated you based on your role, whether you were a prelim or a categorical, or did you find that your work ethic really negated that distinction?
So I think it's program dependent. Where I was at LSU and here at Penn State, I kind of noticed that the prelims and categoricals are treated the same, but it's just, you're just on different rotations. That's pretty much it. You might be at different places, but they expect the same things. People are still willing to teach somebody who is willing to learn.
And while you were in that year, you talked about your mentorship, you talked about your work ethic. Do you think there's anything else that you did to really help yourself be successful? And if the answer is no, that's also a great thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess two things that I wish I did more that could have helped me. I wish I completed step three. Some programs really look at folks who are quote unquote serious about their job, and early completion of step three kind of shows that. The second thing I did, you know, I studied a lot for ABSCITE, but switching over specialties, I pretty much got the average score. And I don't think that really did me any favors. And then the third thing I wish I did, you know, I pretty much just holed up and studied all day and worked all day. I wish I just went out more socially and got to know my co-residents more. It's kind of scary because this is a 1 year or 2 year interview, depending on if you're a one or a two. But I just wish I was more open and just got to know them a little better. Because at some programs, the residents have a lot of say on who they pick. If you're kind of seen as a wallflower or shy, or if you're seen as overly friendly, on the other hand, then it could work against you.
Yeah, very, very tough balance. I think even now, everyone has issues with that balance, especially when you work so many hours with people.
Exactly. Now, and then the thing I'll say is, like, you know, research is a plus minus. If you don't have much, maybe it's good to, you know, dip your feet in one project. But then if you have a lot, you should focus on clinical work.
Yeah, I feel like if you really give yourself a good clinical reputation during your prelim year, that goes miles. I think that really is what people would like to see, at least is my impression. Now, to wrap this up, how do you feel now? You're a PGY1 categorical spot at Penn State, a fantastic program. And I couldn't be happier for you. So how does it feel once you're through that process and looking back?
I'm pretty freaking happy. I remember texting you, like, I had like a meta port that day, and I was like shaking because I didn't know where I was going to match. And then I got the email. I'm like, whoop, I did it.
Yeah, I was thrilled for you. I was so happy.
Yeah, I was, you know, as they say, they had me in the first half. But here we are. I'm super happy to be here. You know, I'm super thankful for LSU, and, you know, I'm happy to be at my new program. Looking forward to my time here.
That's great. That's great. Well, you know, thank you again for all your time, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, good to see you again.
So that wraps up this first podcast about the preliminary experience and ways to navigate through the year. We hope this episode was useful, and for those that made it this far, dominate the day.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.